Hey gearheads, and welcome to GT Garage Talk, a discussion about all things automotive. I am your host, Corey, and we did it! We made it to the end of the year. 2022 is behind us, 2023 is ahead of us, and a lot has happened this year. I know I have seen online some people lamenting all of 2022. I've seen some people just so excited about 2022 and what it brought. I'm more in that camp. But it has been a long year. It has been a big year. It has especially been a big year for us here at GT Garage Talk. So much change, so much growth. Thank you, thank you, thank you. First and foremost, it is because of you, you listening here on this podcast, you following along with the growth of our YouTube channel and our Facebook page, which have absolutely exploded this year. Our YouTube channel started off the year at just over 2,000 subscribers. We are over 7,500 as I sit and record this today. So just great and astounding growth for that channel over this year. And I'm so excited for that. And then on the Facebook front, I couldn't have written this if I wanted to. We started off with somewhere around 2,000-3,000 followers on Facebook, and we have ballooned to 43,000 followers on Facebook. I cannot believe it. And it is all thanks to you, your support, following along with us, keeping up with all that we are doing here at GT Garage Talk. I just can't believe that across all of our channels, we are at over 50,000 dedicated followers to our content here. It just blows my mind how much this has grown in this year alone. So you can see when I say some people are lamenting everything that 2022 brought. Not me, not us here at GT Garage Talk. It has been just an absolutely phenomenal year for us. We've had so much fun in the process, and we've covered so many different vehicles all year long. I'm just thinking back to the very beginning of the year, and again, we were at like 2,300 subscribers on YouTube, and just thinking where we were and what we were driving and what was being delivered to us back then versus what is being delivered to us now, and all the brands that we have connections with that are allowing us to test vehicles for a week at a time, which has allowed, I'm very excited, 2022 brought in both my wife and my son to the car review process. So my whole family are now professional car reviewers. And again, that is just thanks to you. That is thanks to everything that has transpired this year. And it just blows my mind that I get to do this as a job. And I am incredibly thankful. You have no idea. I spent 11 plus years sitting behind a desk all day, every day in a room with no windows, staring at numbers and dreaming about cars. That job did allow me to get my then dream car, then new version of my dream car, because I've said it once, I've said it a million times here on the podcast, 69 Camaro Z28 all-time dream car. That's the one I want if I just had a blank check to write on a vehicle. But yes, my previous corporate office job did allow me to get a 2012 Camaro SS. It was a 45th anniversary edition. Loved that thing, kept it for a year. That's a story all unto itself. I do believe I shared that story way back in episode one of the podcast, but not getting into that because this year, as we close out 2022 and look forward to 2023, I wanted to do something that I have not done here before on the podcast, on the YouTube channel, on any of our outlets. And that is do some awards. I'm not giving away any hardware. I doubt there will be a press release from any of these brands that they got a GT Garage Talk seal of approval for the year of 2022. But hey, we're building to that. Look at all the growth we saw in 2022. So I've got several different categories. I'll read them off to you really quickly, and then we'll actually dive into the details. So obviously, I've got favorite car of the year, favorite SUV of the year, favorite truck of the year, off-road vehicle, electric vehicle, luxury vehicle, favorite feature, which I still like compare all other vehicles that have this specific feature to this is my new standard. So we'll get into that. And then what I would buy today and what I aspire to buy in the future or have enough money to buy in the future. Basically a dream car. All of these come, all of the vehicles I am choosing today on this podcast are vehicles that we have tested on our Facebook page and YouTube channel this year and this year alone. So anything that we have tested before or that I have driven so far this year, but the videos will not go up until 2023, those are all excluded. So to qualify for any of these quote-unquote awards, it had to have gone up on any of my outlets in calendar 2022. That may mean it's a 2021 year model vehicle or older, because I have tested some used vehicles and I've had a lot of fun there. I've got some great connections. Huge shout out to Logan and the crew over at House of Cars and Tyler. So grateful for them. I need to get back over there. He's got some fun stuff. Who knows what you'll see in January? I'll tell you more about that at the end. But it may be a 21 model. It most likely will be a 2022, but I did test several 2023 models here in calendar 2022. And that's a lot of 2020s. So let's just put all that aside. Let's dive right into it. What was Corey's favorite car to review here in 2022? And that award goes to driving perfection in the 2022 Mazda MX-5 Miata. I loved that car so much. If I were still commuting, like, that would be the car. My wife can't drive my Chevy Cruze as it is because it's a 6-speed manual. This Mazda was a 6-speed manual. It's the only way to get a Miata. Don't argue with me on that one. It's cold holder fact. If you get an automatic Miata, I'm sorry, you've done something wrong. But yes, this 2022 Miata was so good. It fit me like a glove. I know I've got some taller friends than myself. I am like the quintessential average American male. I'm 5'10". That car was designed for me. I found my perfect seating position. It didn't have memory seats, but I was the only one driving it, so it didn't really matter to me. There was plenty of room for Holly in the passenger seat, though she said she felt very claustrophobic there, but all that goes away when you pop the roof and you open it up and you've got the whole world around you, and putting that roof down was so easy. You could do it while sitting in the driver's seat. No need to get out. No latches or levers. Just one quick pull of the latch at the top of the windshield and that roof dropped right back behind you. You didn't have to worry about taking up cargo space because the trunk was the trunk, no matter top, up, or down. Decent amount of room in the trunk, decent amount of room in the cabin. Two cup holders that you could actually rearrange. I'm sure you could buy a third cup holder and have three cup holders in there, though I don't know why you would want to, because again, there are only seats for two, but that little 2-liter four-cylinder engine, on paper, 181 horsepower and 151 pound-feet of torque does not sound like much, but in a vehicle as light as that MX-5 Miata, with a wheelbase, with the wheels pushed absolutely out to the corners, and just a dialed-in suspension, every time I got behind the wheel of that one, every time I got behind the wheel, I had a smile on my face. I loved it so much, and I was very sad when that one left us. I know my dad loved it. He's been wanting a Miata for a while, so naturally I took it over to see him and took them for rides in it, and they had fun. They were strongly considering buying one for the longest time, but I think that dream has somewhat passed. But yes, I absolutely had a blast with the MX-5 Miata. I would buy it in a heartbeat. And price as tested for us, we had the loaded Grand Touring model, $34,210. So really didn't break the bank either when it comes to fuel economy. 26 city, 34 highway. And I can tell you, I took Holly to the airport in Dallas and back while we had that. Definitely saw those types of numbers, 29 combined. All around, just an absolute blast of a vehicle. I drove home from Dallas at night with the top down the entire way. That's over or right at a 2-hour drive for us. And as the sun dropped and the stars came out, I was like, yes, this is just good. It was a great cruiser. It was a great vehicle to take down curvy roads. I loved everything about that car. I would have one right now in a heartbeat if I could, if it made sense for us. But unfortunately, right now, it doesn't so much. But that takes us to the next segment, and that was my favorite SUV of the year. Now, this one gets a little tricky. There are a lot of overlaps with some of the other categories here. Like, I could have very easily picked this for my favorite luxury vehicle. I very much could have picked many different vehicles for this category, but I would say the luxury aspects of this one definitely won me over, and that is the 2022 Lincoln Aviator. We had the Reserve One version in all-wheel drive, but it was optioned up very nicely, all black. On the outside, you had black 22-inch wheels, I believe they were, 21, 22. Let's see, I think I put it here in my notes. No, I didn't. Yeah, 22-inch black wheels. There we go. So blacked out all the way around and really did look like a private jet when it came up to you, which, you know, is befitting of a vehicle with the name Aviator. I think the styling, Lincoln's styling, has really come a long way. And of all the vehicles that Lincoln currently makes, the Aviator wears their corporate design language the best. I know it's just a fancy Explorer. I know we tested an Explorer. It didn't exactly wow me. It was just okay. But this Aviator definitely did. I know Holly and I don't want to say we fought over who got to drive it, but she definitely got more wheel time than I did in it, which says a lot for how it worked for us as a family and where it ranks in Holly's mind. That's not to say if Holly doesn't get a lot of wheel time that she doesn't love it, because I'll talk about it later. Her favorite vehicle on this list of vehicles that we've tested this year, she barely got any wheel time in, but she absolutely loved it. And yeah, we'll get into that here in a little bit. But Lincoln Aviator. So seating for six in supreme comfort, especially the front seats. They're 30-way position, perfect position front seats that were heated and ventilated and massaging. They were this, like, I don't even like chestnut brown leather that contrasted with all the black accents so well. I'm very grateful that our tester did not have a black interior, because that would have been too much black for me with the black wheels and all the chrome delete on the outside. But this one, it worked, and it worked very well. All the screens in it had a cloud type theme, you know, again, playing on the Aviator name. Everything just worked in it. Tucker really liked it. He was able to climb in and out of it very easily. There were second row sunshades built into the rear doors. Climbing in the third row was fairly easy and pretty convenient. But you had to flip and fold the seats to get back there, which you couldn't do with Tucker's child seat in place. So that was one knock against it. And you couldn't just go through the center because we had a full second row center console that even had buttons for controlling the massive panoramic sunshade, so that rear seat occupants, if you were using it as a chauffeur vehicle, could open that roof, or the sunshade at least, to see out the glass roof. It was a very nice vehicle. I thoroughly enjoyed our time with it. Funny side note that probably did not make it into either our family review or my solo review of that vehicle. The week we had that, we also had the Audi A3, and we also were not living at home. Our AC went out in the end of summer, right when it's the hottest here in East Texas. And we were actually staying with my in-laws a good hour's drive away. And I made several commutes back and forth. And Holly even had to make a few commutes back and forth. She took the Aviator. I took the Audi more times than not. But I did bring the Lincoln back to Tyler to review. So we both got quite a bit of wheel time in it and absolutely loved it. The 3-liter twin turbo V6 was more than powerful with 400 horsepower, 415 pound-feet of torque. It would move for a rather good size. I don't want to say a big, but a good size 3-row SUV. This thing would scoot. And you can get a more powerful version in the plug-in hybrid, but you couldn't get the wheels that I liked so much in this. Honestly, when it all comes down to it, if I were to buy one, I would have optioned it just like ours. I don't think I would have changed anything on ours. I liked it that much. And I mentioned that 3-liter twin turbo was a little on the thirsty side, 17 city, 20 combined. And like I said, we did put quite a few miles on it going back and forth from Grantsaline to Tyler, and Holly took it on a work trip. I believe she took it all the way down to Jacksonville, Texas, if I'm not mistaken. No, Nacogdoches, Texas. So yeah, a lot of miles put on this one. If you need to see how far all of that is, just go on Google Maps. Tyler, Texas, Nacogdoches, Texas, Grantsaline, Texas. Go check them all out. We put some miles on it and enjoyed every single one of them. The ride was so plush. It was very, very nice. As tested, ours was $77,930. Really enjoyed that vehicle for the length of the time that we had it. And also, very sad to see that one go. Next up is favorite pickup truck. And we've tested a lot. I know that we even had the Texas Auto Writers Truck of Texas for 2022 here on the channel. That award last year went to the brand new 2022 Toyota Tundra. We had the TRD Pro version. I really did like the Tundra TRD Pro, but the real winner for me in favorite truck that I tested this year has to go to the 2023 Chevy Silverado ZR2. I loved that thing. If you watched my video on that, you would know that I was actually given that truck for the 3 or 4 days that I was in LA for the LA Auto Show. Chevy was more than happy to hook me up. And boy, did they deliver. I reached out to them, full transparency. I reached out to Chevrolet. I said, hey, I'll be in LA for the auto show. These are the dates. Are there any vehicles that you could get for me? No specifics, just wide open. What do you have? And they said, we'll get back to you. I'm thinking, you know, we're in the EV capital of the world. I knew I was going to be doing commuting, stuff like that. Fully expected maybe the Bolt EV or Bolt EUV, which I'm still dying to get behind the wheel of one of those two. So Chevy, you know, hook your boy up now that I'm back in Texas. But no, they did not. They gave me something that made me feel like I was back home in Texas, and that is the biggest, baddest Silverado 1500 that they make. That is the new ZR2. And what those two letters and number designate are something a little bit more than the Z71. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know why Chevy does this, but I'll go ahead and spill it out anyway. Chevy has option codes, and the most famous one of these ever to sneak out into the public, they were always meant to be internal option codes. I've already mentioned it here on this channel, was Z28. So the Chevy Camaro came out in 1967, and to meet SCCA racing regulations, they needed a engine no larger than 302 cubic inches. And they had to produce so many for consumers to buy to be able to qualify for the race series that they were in. So they made internal option code Z28. It gave you that famous 302 cubic inch V8 under the hood and a few performance driving options, suspension, transmission, all that good stuff. And you had to know to ask for it. They didn't market it because the performance version really was supposed to be the SS, the Super Sport. But a few people who were in the know knew you go and you ask for option code Z28. And this was before Google, this was before Twitter, before things were trending. So you couldn't see that Z28 was trending, but somehow word got out. And for 1969, which was kind of a one-off model year, it had unique styling for that one year alone, but based off of the 67 and 68 platform, they decided to lean in. And Chevy said, you know, we'll make badges, we'll do the whole thing. And so hence the Z internal coding was made public. And another famous one is Z71, which was the off-road package on their pickup trucks, which gave you things like skid plates and downhill descent control. I know those more modern things, but, you know, off-road bits. And again, internal production code made public. Now it's widely known as an option code. ZR2 really harkens back to the smaller Colorado, but even the S10, because that was like the off-roady S10 back in the 90s. And for the Colorado, the ZR2 had DSSV Multimatic shocks, which are like F1 racing technology that react faster than your traditional reservoir shock. And all that to say, they brought all of that racing technology, off-road goodness, and put it in the Silverado finally, and let Chad Hall go off racing in it. He basically raced the truck that I was given for 3 days of driving there in California. He took it to Baja, raced it in Baja. Like, it is a race-proven engineering design all the way around. No, they did not put a different engine in it, that you still get the 6.2 liter V8, which is more than powerful, 420 horsepower, 460 pound-feet of torque. They didn't do any crazy upgrades to the frame because Chevy already has a very strong frame in their trucks. I know there's a lot of controversy around the ZR2. Did Chevy do enough when you've got the Raptor, which has a very powerful engine in it and is really meant for jumping and racing out in Baja? It has a Baja driving mode. Then you've got the crazy Hellcat-powered Ram 1500 TRX making 702 horsepower. Again, not really a direct competitor for this ZR2. The ZR2 kind of fits in some white space. It's more than the Z71 Trail Boss, which really does compete against the F-150 Tremor and the Ram 1500 Rebel. And this really fills that gap. And when it comes to price, it's really close to the F-150 Raptor, not the more powerful Raptor R, which I'm yet to get behind the wheel of, but really close in price to the Raptor. So a lot of people are saying, why would you buy this over a Raptor? Pickup trucks have a very loyal following. So I personally fell for this ZR2. I really, really did like it. I wish I had more than the 3 days in it. I wish I had it back home where I've got Barnwell Mountain to test out its off-road chops. There was so much more I wanted to do with this while I had it, but I did get to check some things off my bucket list while I had it. I actually filmed the driving portion of the review while I was driving down to Malibu at that point, hadn't been to Malibu yet, and the drive was absolutely stunning. I was staying in a hotel in Calabasas because I knew I wanted to stay a little bit away from LA so I could actually get some time behind the wheel of the truck while I had it. So I picked a hotel in Calabasas, loved that area, and the drive south to Malibu was breathtaking, especially when you cut through the mountains and you could start to see the ocean. The scenery in Southern California is gorgeous. This truck was amazing. I had my last Silverado back in the early 2000s. It was an 07, right when they changed to the new body style. It wasn't the old classic that they carried over from the prior year. And mine was a two-wheel drive. Crazy thing is, like, it was very well loaded at $37,000. This ZR2 cost $40,000 more than my last Silverado. This one stickered at $77,400, so had a pretty big sticker price on it. And with that 6.2 liter V8 under the hood, making 14 mpg in the city, 17 on the highway, and 15 combined, I'll be honest, I saw about 13 in my time, but again, I had it in LA traffic, so, you know, read into that what you will. It did have engine start-stop technology when I did get stuck in that quintessential LA traffic on the 405 and the whatever freeways I was taking out there. It cut off, but for the most part, I was blessed with fairly good traffic while I was there. And one of the benefits to having that vehicle while I was there was I towered over all the many Prius vehicles. I towered over all the Priuses that surrounded me and the Teslas that surrounded me on the highways in LA. If I put my blinker on and started moving, people got out of my way. I absolutely loved that about the truck. So maybe, you know, I've got some rose-colored glasses on when I think back to my time with that pickup truck. Again, I didn't live with it for that long. I didn't have to fill it up with gas while I had it. So there are a lot of, again, rose-colored glasses type imagery that go on with my summation of that truck, but I absolutely loved it while I had it. I will say a good runner-up, believe it or not, was the Ford F-150 Lightning. I can't not mention the F-150 Lightning because it got me so much traction on Facebook in particular. There were so many hateful comments on a reel that I posted to Facebook of loading the front trunk up with groceries at the grocery store. Like, I get it. You guys want pickup trucks that go vroom and make loud noises. The ZR2 absolutely did that. But I see the F-150 Lightning buyer being a different buyer. Think of it more as a luxury vehicle than a true workhorse pickup. The payload numbers on it are still good. If you filled up the bed with payload or filled up the cabin with payload, your range is not going to decrease that much. Yes, pulling a trailer ruins the aerodynamics of it, ruins your overall range. It's not really a tow rig. And I would hazard that Ford wouldn't claim that it is. If you really got to talking to them, though, they do rate it for towing. Don't anticipate doing any long-range towing with it. But for us here in East Texas, we've got two lakes very close to us. Even if we had a big, heavy boat, we could get to and from the lake on a charge, no problem. I was just impressed with the ride of it. It was the first ever F-150 with an independent rear suspension, so it had a very smooth ride for a big pickup truck. The acceleration was mind-altering. Pickup trucks, big vehicles like that should not move as quick as that Lightning. It is the fastest production F-150 ever made, and that goes back to the previous Lightnings that were V8 powered, and, you know, Paul Walker drove in Fast and Furious, you know, going back to those. Yeah, it's faster than them. And I don't see a lot of people complaining that those couldn't tow and all that stuff. So you have to just take all the, you know, yes, it is a truck, but your traditional truck buyer is not going to be shopping an F-150. If you're looking for a luxury vehicle, I say hands down, it makes perfect sense to get a Lincoln badge. I don't understand why they have not already applied to that powertrain to the Lincoln Navigator, because all it really is a retrofitted F-150. I mean, it is the most un-EV EV out there. So I say Ford, you know, dive in, you know, apply that at least to the Navigator. If not, take my advice and bring back the Blackwood pickup truck that was an F-150 based pickup truck, and, you know, have yourself a real luxury winner there without as much controversy as the F-150 Lightning is getting. And, you know, kind of restore that Blackwood name, because it didn't have the best run the first go round. So those are my thoughts on the F-150 Lightning. Next up, off-road vehicle. Hey, staying with Blue Oval here. You know, we had a Ford Bronco and we got to take it off-road. Holly got to go off-roading for the first time ever. And she drove through some mud puddles and climbed some obstacles. And she had so much fun in that. I know I was invited to the Bronco off-rodeo, where I had a lot of fun in a wild track trim version, but we had an Outer Banks for a week. Again, we took it to Barnwell Mountain. The whole family went off-roading. Tucker was in the back seat. Holly was behind the wheel. I was riding shotgun, and we just had so much fun. Now, you might be confused, because for the longest time, and even still, I'm Team Wrangler all the way. I think when it comes to all-out off-road performance, the Jeep Wrangler is the one to get. We did drive a Wrangler this year, so it's a little surprising that I would pick the Bronco for favorite off-roader, but I didn't really get much off-road time in Wranglers this year. And going back to the fact that Holly was behind the wheel of the Bronco while we were taking it off-road just speaks to its strengths. And it is a much simpler vehicle to off-road than the Wrangler is. Everything is electronically controlled. You have the seven or eight different Haas drive modes, or GOAT, there we go, GOAT drive modes, not Haas, that's something else, but the GOAT drive modes with a dial selector there on the center console that really does everything for you. Whereas the Wrangler has a, you know, traditional transfer case that you had to manhandle to get it into four high or four low or two high. And I like that. That speaks more to me and what I would like in an off-road vehicle. But for the masses, for the simplicity of it, the Bronco really, really hit a home run with everything that they baked into it. And it was so much smoother on the drive home from Barnwell, thanks to that independent front suspension. If we were to buy a Wrangler or a Bronco here for GT Garage Talk, and Holly had any say whatsoever, which, let's be honest, she does, it would be the Bronco. And I would be 100% okay with it. I don't think you could go wrong between the two. But it really goes back to what I was saying with the F-150 Lightning and who the real shopper is there, not your traditional truck buyer. And as far as the Bronco, they are so immensely capable from the factory. Yes, some sacrifices are made with the independent front suspension versus the Wrangler's live axle up front, but I'm just blown away with the capability of the Bronco. And really enjoyed our time in it. Unfortunately, the timing of us having that one and the way it was optioned, we didn't fully get to experience the everything Bronco about it. So ours had the roof rack system, which made it next to impossible to take off the back panel or the middle panel of the removable roof. So we could only really take off these sections over the driver and front passenger. We did take all four doors off one day before it got really cold around here and rained on us for 90% of the time that we had it. But for a day, we were able to enjoy the doors off and at least up front, the roof off, and really experience the open air of the Bronco. And that's one of those things that I just really, really like about both the Wrangler and the Bronco. Everybody's chasing after SUVs nowadays. I really love having a convertible. I really love having room for my entire family, though, and all our gear. And I really like off-roading. So the Bronco and Wrangler both really hit the nail on the head with this one. I will say the obvious runner-up here has to go to the Jeep Wrangler 392. Just an insane vehicle. We have tested one off-road here on the channel. I didn't get to drive it. I was driving the Wrangler 4xe, being followed by the 392. But it's just, that's a really good vehicle. I called it the modern family muscle car because, again, you could put five people in it. My child seat could fit in it perfectly for Tucker. The model we tested had the Sky One Touch power opening roof, so you didn't have to worry about taking off panels or anything like that. And believe it or not, the day I had it, it started to rain on me almost out of nowhere. I mean, it was in the forecast, but I thought I had longer to film with the roof open than I did. So it was very easy to close up on the fly and hit the road, whereas if I had gotten the Freedom panels or if I had had a Bronco with the top off, would have been a little more hastily figured out situation, closing it up so that I didn't get rained on. But yes, I absolutely love both the Wrangler and the Bronco. But for the purposes of this test, my favorite family off-roader especially, but my favorite off-roader that I actually tested off-road this year definitely goes to the Ford Bronco. Next up, switching gears a little bit, is a favorite EV. And again, I already mentioned the F-150 Lightning. Thoroughly enjoyed that one. There were some downsides with that one for us anyway. We have a two-car garage, but it's two single doors. And on my side of the garage and the side of the garage that has the plug to charge an EV, well, that's where our spare fridge is, and we can't fit a full-size pickup truck in either side of our garage, much less that side where the fridge is. So every time we went to charge it, we had the bed hanging out of our garage. We could not leave it in there overnight, lest we leave our garage open overnight, and we've got cats and raccoons in the neighborhood and possums, so we did not want to leave that open to all the animals that come out at night. And so I was left to charge it during the day while I was working, editing, doing stuff like that. So it had a very large battery as well, and I don't think we ever truly topped it off to 100%, but one time. So that was a little bit of a downside for us, but if we were to buy one, we would have gotten a longer charging cable. I've got a perfect spot to park the vehicle outside. We've got a gravel pad just next to our garage, so we've got plenty of room outside to park it, where even if I bought my Silverado ZR2, I would have to park there. It was just adding that element of needing to charge it that took it down a notch, which gave room for my favorite EV to be the Genesis GV60. I loved that vehicle. I would not have changed a thing about the one that we had. It was the right color, which, as I came to find out, as I came to find out, there were two Genesis GV60s in the Dallas fleet, and one was a little more tame, but I got the one that was definitely more wild in the Sao Paulo lime, just electric yellow green color that stood out no matter where you were. It screamed, look at me. And I think Genesis's design language has been just on point as of late. They've been killing it with their designs. The interior of that one tied in that Sao Paulo lime with perhaps my favorite color in navy blue. I mean, go watch that video. You will see my watch, my phone, my glasses, my wardrobe, my everything, our luggage that our family bought prior to that car even existing, all matched that GV60. So they had me hook, line, and sinker with the color and with the design language. It had some pretty sweet features, which, again, runner-up favorite feature here. You know, we'll get into that later, but I absolutely loved the fact that it was completely keyless. I did have a key, so I could use it while we had it, but you could program your face. Yes, your face into a camera mounted on the driver's door that you could walk up, hit a button on the exterior of the vehicle. It would read your face. If it was you, it would unlock the vehicle. When you get inside, there's a fingerprint reader that it reads your fingerprint. And if it is, again, you, you may start the vehicle and drive away. I tested it. We go to church not too far from our house. And I didn't tell Holly because she would have freaked. She would have lost it on me. But I was fully prepared if my test failed that I would be hoofing it back to the house on foot to get the key to come back to church to pick them up. But we went to church without the key. I locked it up, walked away. I was like, okay, I sure hope we're getting home. And yes, it worked flawlessly. I was able to unlock it with my face, start it with my fingerprint, and we were good to go. Absolutely loved it. It was such a fun vehicle to drive. You know, a lot of people say EVs don't have character. Genesis made up for that in both the color of this one and the design of it. It looks like nothing else on the road. It has a very distinct look to it, but it also looks very Genesis in its design. So I absolutely loved my time in it. I turned a lot of heads while driving it, that's for sure. But the thing that really, really sold me on it was in normal driving conditions, the dual motors make 429 horsepower and 446 pound-feet of torque. Dual motors, so it's an all-wheel drive system. But there is a Sao Paulo Lime button on the steering wheel that says boost. And for 10 seconds, it gives you 483 horsepower and 516 pound-feet of torque for, you know, passing on the highway. If you just need to get by somebody, which I'm not going to lie, I did. I drove it to and from Dallas and found a Tesla Model Y Performance. And we were messing with each other from, oh gosh, just outside of Terrell all the way into Dallas on I-20. And I would choose, we've tested a Tesla Model Y Performance. I would choose hands down this GV60 1 million times out of 1 million times over the Tesla Model Y. The build quality, the fit and finish, the just utter silence that was in the cabin, the materials used, the colors used. Tesla doesn't offer a lot of color. They give you red, white, blue, black, and grayish silver. Whereas, again, this Genesis came in Sao Paulo Lime and even had a mint green color that is what Holly would option if she were ordering one. But, yeah, Sao Paulo Lime, check. The navy and Sao Paulo interior for me, check. Another one of Holly's favorite features of all the cars we've tested this year was the glowing orb. When you had the vehicle off, the gear selector flipped over and it was a crystal that was backlit and you could change the LED backlighting in the car. And when you started the vehicle, it flipped over to your rotating dial for park, reverse, drive, and neutral. Yeah, I guess it had a neutral, being an EV and all. And part of the reason that exists is, you know, EVs are quiet. How do you know if the vehicle's off or on? Well, make it impossible to even put it in gear. So that was a really cool feature. It just oozed charisma and style and just uniqueness. It is unlike many other things on the road. Unfortunately for us here in East Texas, at least right now, you can't get one. And with product shortages and supply chain issues, they're really hard to get in general. But if you live on the West Coast or in New York, I do believe these are available to purchase. We're going to have to wait a little bit longer down here in the South. But oh my goodness, yes, I absolutely loved this one. The range on it suffered because it was more performance oriented. We did drive its corporate cousins in the Kia EV6. We had the GT line version and the Hyundai Ioniq 5. We had the premium all-wheel drive version. I can't remember the exact trim, but it was loaded, top trim, all of that. This one of all three had the shortest overall range at 235 miles of all electric range. But being that it's built on their 800 volt charging architecture, it could go from 10 to 80% charge at a DC fast charger in 18 minutes. And from our time fast charging the Kia EV6, I 100% believe that claim. And it gets warm enough here in East Texas. I know I've got some friends that were cold weather testing EVs and they were struggling to charge. They didn't precondition the battery, all that fun stuff. We don't really have to do that 11 months out of 12 here in East Texas. But yes, really, really loved this vehicle. And it would make a great addition to our garage here. Would fit very well into our lifestyle. Based on chargers that are around us as we speak, we could make it work. I still don't love road tripability for vehicles with under 300 miles of electric range. I think that should be the new benchmark going forward. I know I've gone on a rant of the VW ID Buzz, which I'll go ahead and say that is my car to watch out for here in 2022 of the vehicles I tested. It definitely had a lot of character and personality. Got to check it out at the LA Auto Show. That's my one to watch this year. But it won't get here until essentially calendar 2025, and it's only going to have 235 miles of range. It is not as fast as the GV60. It is not as fun to drive, I can guarantee you that, as the Genesis GV60. So everything that you made sacrifices for that GV60, getting all the additional performance, you don't get with the VW ID Buzz. You're really just leaning on an older, outdated EV architecture and a much bigger vehicle that is meant for more people and more stuff, and really leans heavy on nostalgia. So, I would say it is only because of the performance intentions and chops behind that GV60 that I will give it a pass for having less than 300 miles of range on a full charge. But hopefully that is something that we see creep up in the years to come. This next vehicle was my favorite luxury vehicle. It also was very strong as a contender in the EV segment, and that is the 2023 Mercedes-Benz EQS 580 4MATIC SUV. And if that ain't a mouthful, I don't know what is. This is the all-electric S-Class SUV version of their electric line of vehicles. I said in the video while I had it, Mercedes is leaning into EQS being the or the EQ prefix being the designator that it's an electric vehicle, which for the most part works with their lineup. They've got the EQS sedan. They've got the EQE sedan, which are the S-Class and E-Class equivalents. You've got the EQB, which is the equivalent of the GLB SUV. But in the main problem is, like, for the S-Class sedan, it's S580. For the S-Class equivalent gas-powered SUV, it's the GLS 580. Problem is, you can't say GLS EV because they want to use this EQ branding, so it's an EQS SUV. Anyway, all that to say, we had this one around Christmas time. It was very recently in our garage, and oh, we loved it so much. And as we should, it was $148,000 and $490, extra dollars, tack that on there. So $148,490, it should be nice, and it should be very luxurious. And even though our model was missing the $450 optional heated steering wheel, Holly noted that steering wheel never really got cold. It was very thickly rimmed, very softly clad in leather. It was so nice. The seats were heated, ventilated, and massaging up front, heated in the middle row, had a third row for hauling extra people. I can tell you, Tucker and I rode in the third row, my parents in the second, Holly and her mom up front as we went to go see the Christmas parade. So it is possible to get six people, possibly even seven in there, somewhat comfortably, but it is a tight fit. I would say, in all actuality, it's a good four-seater with a bonus seat for kids in the back or in the middle of that second row. You can option them as only a five-seater, and I do believe that gives you a little more cargo space back in the back. Again, we really enjoyed our time with it. It was so comfortable. The ride was so smooth because it's an EV. It was very quiet and, again, very smooth. I'm glad that Mercedes put a decent sidewall on the tires on this vehicle, which gave it, again, a better ride. It has the adjustable suspension. Again, just a cloud-like ride in this. Did have an off-road mode, but unfortunately, as I mentioned, we had it around Christmas. Trying to take it an hour out of the way to Gilmer to film off-road, which would have been a day-long film shoot unto itself, and just wasn't in the cards for us at the time that we had it. And I would have had a really hard time justifying taking a $149,000 luxury SUV off-road. I couldn't find a spotter. Again, a lot of reasons why I didn't off-road this one, but the sound system in it, the Burmester 3D sound system, was amazing. It had the massive hyper screen up front, which is really three different screens, like the most impressive center infotainment at over 17 inches of screen real estate there in the middle. The passenger had their own screen. You could watch movies over there, and Mercedes even, you know, in their German wisdom, had a sensor for the driver's eyeballs so that if the driver were tempted to watch what the passenger was watching over there on their screen, it would pause it. So a lot of stuff built into that one. This did have over 300 miles of range. I think the EPA estimated number is 285. We consistently saw 320 plus while we had it. It was easy to pull into our garage and charge overnight. We kept it nearly at 100% all the time. I don't believe we dipped below 90%. We did a lot of commuting and Christmas shopping while we had it. So really just a lot of sitting in traffic, and for that, it absolutely excelled. It would have done so well for us as a road trip vehicle. Again, it had over 300 miles of range based on the trip computer. I would have loved to have tested that out, but all the sacrifices that I just mentioned for the performance we made with the GV60 electric vehicle from Genesis, you don't make here in the EQS SUV. So it's definitely way more luxurious, and it should be. It was much more expensive. I don't know if I even mentioned the price of the GV60. That one stickered for $69,000, which compared to a lot of vehicles on this list was quite a steal. But it didn't have massaging seats. It had kinetic seats, the GV60, that is. So it would do a lot to keep you comfortable, but it was definitely no S-Class Mercedes-Benz by any means, but it was oh so comfortable. Really, really, really loved the GV60 and really, really loved that Mercedes-Benz EQS SUV. Would be happy with either, but obviously if I were buying one, it would be the much cheaper GV60. So that is that. Now we get more into the little more abstract, and that is favorite feature. So I kind of preluded this earlier with the Genesis GV60's keyless functionality, the fact that you could drive it completely without the key. I left it at home one point in time. That's a strong contender, but I don't know how often I would use that. I know I geek out over technology stuff a lot here. I would most likely have the key on me. I know with my wife's Jeep, sometimes we're like, all right, where's the key? Where's the key? We did put an Apple AirTag on it, so now we can hunt it down. So yes, it would be 100% nice to not have to worry about that whatsoever. But even in the back of my mind, I would be like, is this going to work? Like, what if I'm 4 hours from home without a key? Is this really going to work? But I did like that feature. It is a strong runner up to the winner here. Again, I think about going for a long run somewhere. If I parked it somewhere, it would be nice not to have to worry about taking keys with me and all that stuff. So very strong contending feature there. But I'm picking more of an everyday, affects more people type of feature. And that was the Qi wireless charger in the Cadillac Escalade. I have tested a lot of Qi wireless chargers. I have put a lot of miles on vehicles and attempted to charge my phone on Qi wireless chargers. I can say only one vehicle, only one, has actually done what the feature says it should do and charged my phone while it was in the Qi wireless charger. All the others, especially since I was using, you know, Apple CarPlay, playing music, and probably using navigation 9 times out of 10 on long drives. All the other Qi wireless chargers, if I had to put it on my phone on the charging pad in the most perfect of ways to where there was actually electricity passing from the vehicle to my phone, if everything was right, it held a charge. And the Cadillac Escalade, on multiple occasions, again, using Apple CarPlay, playing music, using navigation, things that are very power hungry on a device like an iPhone 14 Pro Max, it still charged my phone to 100% every time that I used it. I was beyond impressed with the Qi wireless charger in the Cadillac Escalade. Hands down, the best I have sampled in any vehicle ever, not just this year, ever. It's a vertical charger, so you drop your phone in vertically. It doesn't take up a lot of room on the center console. Unfortunately, if you drop something in there, getting it back out is rather difficult. Holly didn't know what it was at first and dropped the key in there. Getting the key out was tough, but putting your phone in there, it held snugly. There were some rubber pads in there that held it snugly into place. So it discouraged me from picking my phone up at stoplights and checking email, text message, Facebook, whatever. So it discouraged bad driving. It charged my phone and it was out of the way and didn't take up much room. It just checks all the boxes. I was in a Chevy Tahoe just today and a Silverado just today, both of which had wireless charging pads. Neither one of them worked instantaneously when I put them in there. The Escalades did. Like, hands down, the best Qi wireless charger, and is why it wins the best feature award, because all Qi wireless chargers should be like that one. I'm trying to think. I believe it was the Chevy Blazer that I was in today as I sit to record this. Its Qi wireless charger was in the center console underneath the center stack AC units. It was in the middle of what would have been a wide little cubby of storage, but it was in the very middle, completely negating that whole section for storage. So it took up more space than it needed to, and more space than it had to, and only sort of okay charged my phone. So again, I can't go on and on about how good the Qi wireless charger was in the Cadillac Escalade. I'm a little biased on that one. It just worked very well, and I was so pleased that it did, and it made such an impression on me that, there we go, best feature that I tested this year, Cadillac Escalade's Qi wireless charger. Last two categories, what vehicle would I buy today, and what vehicle do I aspire to own, or would I buy if I had more money, and again, taking the Camaro Z28 out of the equation. So we'll start first with what would I buy? Out of all the vehicles that I tested, knowing my budget, knowing my family needs, knowing our garage setup, everything about it, what fits my family, my lifestyle, everything right now. And this one is a little bit of a toss-up because we had both of these vehicles at the exact same time and loved them both. Well, like back to back, not the exact same time, but back to back, one right after the other. I do believe they overlapped by a day or two. Doesn't matter. The winner is the Mazda CX-50, which is just an all around very good crossover SUV. Fit the family very well. Had a very large sunroof, had a lot of driving dynamics and character to it, as Mazdas do. The styling on it was on point. I love the new styling direction of Mazda. So this CX-50 just nailed it on all fronts. I did get to test one off-road, was very capable in the obstacles that I had to test it over. And there are at least 4 videos on the channel from this year of the CX-50. And that's because I got to drive it on 3 separate occasions, and the 4th video would be Holly behind the wheel of it. So she liked it. I liked it. It worked well for our family. Very fun to drive with a very close runner up in a vehicle that compares very favorably to it, very similar in size, very similar in style, very similar in options. And that was the Buick Envision Avenir that we had from Buick. I had that one around the time that I was going to an off-road event. I drove the Toyota 4Runner TRD Pro 3 hours home from that event through DFW traffic and got back in the Buick Envision to film my review of that. And it was just so nice to get in a vehicle that didn't nosedive every time you stepped on the brakes. It was very calm and comfortable. But of the two, I would say the Mazda CX-50 just had a more fun to drive factor, but the Buick was definitely a classier vehicle all the way around. So there is what vehicle would I buy today. And lastly, of the vehicles that we tested this year, what do we aspire to own? I already mentioned we would probably have a Bronco if Holly had her way. We might have the GV60 if, you know, we're shopping in the EV space. If I wanted a truck, the Silverado ZR2 would be up there. But one that made an impression on both Holly and myself was the 2022 Lexus LC 500 convertible. That one holds a special place here at GT Garage Talk. The sound of the V8 won me over. The looks won both Holly and myself over. It turns heads no matter where you go. It is an absolute stunning design. It wears the Lexus design language better than any vehicle that they make today, or really in the past. I'd say it's the most beautiful Lexus they have ever made. And I'm willing to go to bat on that phrase right there. But we did have the convertible version. I think the coupe is a little more beautiful to look at, but the convertible is definitely the way we would go here in the family. It was so much fun just to drop the top. It was starting to get a little on the cold side. It was the end of October that we had it, but I don't really think we drove around with it much with the top up. In fact, in our family review, I was riding in the back seat with Tucker just to prove adults could fit back there behind other adults. Granted, Holly is 5 foot and I'm 5'10". Was a little bit of a tight fit. And yes, when we did put the top up, I had no place to put my head. So adults could sit back there if the top's down, which again, we had like 98% of the time had the top down. Absolutely gorgeous car. Sounded amazing. The performance of it was spectacular. All around a wonderful Grand Tour vehicle and made quite an impression here on us at the channel. And I already mentioned, gave it away earlier, vehicle to look forward to. Can't wait to get some time behind the wheel of. That is the Volkswagen ID. Buzz, the rebirth of the VW van. I think... sadly, I think VW missed the mark. I've already gone on my rant about how its range is too low for the model year in which it will be designated when we finally get it. And I just feel like they are maybe 10 years too late. I think they could have been printing money with those if they had brought it out, even with the 230-ish miles of electric range that we are going to get in 2025. I think they would have been printing money if it was one of the first mainstream electric vehicles behind Tesla. It just makes sense to make an electric version of the Hippiemobile. And for that matter, the VW Beetle should already be teased to us as a potential electric vehicle moving forward. Those are like the two most obvious electric vehicles if there ever were one. And yet there's no EV Beetle on the horizon that I have seen yet. And we still have to wait a whole nother year before we get the ID. Buzz. But I am excited to get behind the wheel of them. There are so many little, to borrow a phrase, quirks and features of that vehicle that I very much look forward to testing and exploring if and when we get some wheel time in one. But I want to know from you as we wrap up 2022, what are some of your favorite vehicles that we've had here at the channel? There's been a lot to choose from. I've posted a lot of content this year and we are looking to only expand upon that further moving into 2023. So find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, comment on what your favorite vehicles were in all of these categories. Go find the videos on YouTube and comment on them. Go find them on Facebook and comment on them. Shoot me a message, shoot me an email at gtgaragetalk@gmail.com. I want to hear back from you. Did I get it right? Did I get it wrong? I want feedback on this episode. I put a lot on the line out there and I have really had a lot of fun making this list because it was a year in the making. And that leads me to 2023. What do we have to look forward to in 2023? I can already tell you, I mentioned I drove a lot of vehicles today. And that is because every single day from January 3rd to February 3rd, I plan on having a quick vlog style walk around of a vehicle, at least if I don't have a full test of a vehicle on that day. So for 31 days straight, starting on January 3rd, I will have a new vehicle and a new video up on both our YouTube channel and our Facebook page. So we've got a lot of content coming to you just in the first 34 days. I'll be fair, 34 days of the year. And got a lot of content coming from that. We've already been invited. We've got a special trip booked, plane tickets, hotel room, all that stuff. So we've got that in the works. We've got the Houston Auto Show. We've got the Chicago Auto Show. I hope to make it to both New York and Detroit this year. So we've got a lot of fun stuff coming down the pipeline, and I cannot wait to share it with each and every one of you and expand the audience even further. Again, we're sitting at just over 7,500 faithful followers and subscribers on YouTube, 43,500 something on Facebook, just over 1,000 on Instagram. Twitter is starting to pick up, but TikTok has really started picking up here lately. So just, yes, go find us, support us on all those platforms. I very much look forward to making more content for you and bringing you more in 2023. Again, go find us everywhere. Happy New Year to each and every one of you. And until next time, Gearheads, bye.